Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. It's Bird News with Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Mindy.
And, of course, we're talking birds mostly, but we'll talk about anything in the natural world, any creature you want to talk about today.
All creatures, great and small.
Yes, we will talk about anything. Our number, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Well, we start out with a little bit of weather, and it's been really kind of lovely temperature-wise. I guess today's going to feel a little more like summer than it has, right?
It's been a little bit warmer. It's just been kind of cool, and that's impacting all kinds of things. We do diamondback terrapin research at the sanctuary in Wellfleet, and all our volunteers are waiting for the nest to hatch, and they're taking longer than they usually do for the little baby turtles to come out. And it's just been kind of cool, and it continues to be cool. It just seemed like late August came around, and all of a sudden it was October.
I know, it got really cool.
Cold at night,
yes.
But we're
next
doing,
few days is going to be pretty nice, though.
This is beautiful. I mean, I used to live in Florida. I used to live in South Florida in Homestead, and lived through a few hurricanes down there, including Wilma, knocked our power out for a week, and but I'm thinking of my friends down there. The Keys really got nailed. It's almost Andrew-like down there. I mean, that was the big one for people in South Florida, and so. Thinking of those guys down there, hurricanes aren't good for anybody when they're like that. They're not good for birds either.
Anything, right? Yeah. Well, again, we're still kind of assessing the damage there, aren't we? Can't get in at this point. And the Keys anyway. All right, so we've had several rare bird sightings of late in our neck of the woods here. So what have we been seeing?
Yeah, we've been doing pretty well at the sanctuary this summer with wacky birds from other regions. There were two white ibises that brought a lot of eyeballs to the sanctuary. One of our volunteers came in off the trails, and I'm sitting at my desk on my phone, and she shows me the back of her camera, and there are the two immature white ibises standing in our salt marsh. And I hang up the phone. So I can immediately get the word out. I mean, this is a really rare bird. There's no white ibises anywhere near Massachusetts. It's a bird you see when you go to South Florida. They're kind of everywhere down there. But very rare up here, and so a lot of people came, and they were very cooperative. Not all rare birds are like that, and they hung out for a couple of weeks. Lots of people got to see them, and just brought a lot of people to the sanctuary, and that was nice. And then recently, there was a somewhat less cooperative rare bird, a rare flycatcher from the west called a Say's Phoebe. And so people probably know eastern phoebes. Mm-hmm. They're pretty familiar. They like to nest around people. Phoebes are pretty friendly. They like to nest, under your back porch eaves or something like that. Or, if you have a cabin somewhere in the woods, you'll go there in the summer and see that the phoebes are nesting there on your back porch light or something like that. They're very comfortable around people, campground, outhouses, things like that. And Say's phoebes are no different. They're from, they shouldn't occur east of Kansas. I mean, Great Plains, Rocky Mountains, western U.S. So this was a real weird one. A couple of birders found this hanging out towards the end of our trail out by the beach at Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. And I had heard word of this, and I'm appropriately skeptical, Mr. Skeptical Bird Guy.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Who was it that saw this? It turned out it was actually a couple of good birders from off Cape, and they had already photographed it and gotten it up on eBird. And so I was already getting calls about this bird before I even made it all the way out to where it was to verify it. People, is it still there? And it was really cooperative for one afternoon, just flitting around, fly catching. And it's a beautiful, kind of subtly beautiful flycatcher. Gray with these kind of cinnamon tones underneath, very different than an eastern phoebe. And so we got to enjoy it for an afternoon, and then as Say's phoebes typically are, it was gone the next day, and nobody has seen it since. So we call those in the birding world one-day wonders.
One-day wonders, yeah.
Yeah. And then the vineyard had a pelican recently.
An
American white pelican, a real giant among birds. This was kind of a weird one. It turned up in Scituate one day. It was this American white pelican turned up at this unpronounceable pond in Mushquashicut Pond or something in Scituate. And the next day it turned up on Martha's Vineyard. And it's just... I mean, these things
weigh
30 pounds, like nearly 10-foot wingspans. It's a massive bird just kind of standing around in a pond on the vineyard. And I think it's still there. I keep seeing reports. This was a couple of weeks ago. But that's a really rare bird. I mean, that's for these parts. They breed in these gigantic colonies kind of in remote parts of the interior west. Like there's a colony at the Great Salt Lake in Utah, places like big marshes, and they migrate to the Gulf Coast or Mexico, places like that. Some winter in Florida, but they're just not supposed to be in Massachusetts. Wow. It's just that's why birding is so fun. You never know what is going to turn up. They have wings, and weather brings them places they're not supposed to be. Right. Some of them have bad senses of direction. And that's what makes it interesting.
Yeah. Also, there was something I've never heard of. South Polar, I don't know how you say it.
Skua.
Skua. Skua. What is that?
It's a bird.
Yeah. What kind of bird?
It's a really cool bird. Birders love these guys. You know, we talk about Jaegers on here a lot. Mm-hmm. And these are like Jaegers on steroids.
Oh, wow.
And we always talk about Jaegers as kind of the top of the avian food chain out here. In our oceanic waters and coastal waters here, the Jaegers are they're around now. You can see them. Like I saw some.
It's like
up
an air show watching them.
Good way of putting it because they're incredibly aerobatic, and they're chasing terns. And when you see a bigger dark bird chasing a tern off the beach, and it's going straight up. And just like a fighter jet.
Mm-hmm,
just,
exactly, yeah.
That's a Jaeger. And so a Skua is in that same genus, but they're bigger and way more rare. I mean, you just would never expect
Where
to see one from
land. Where do you normally find them?
Offshore, deeper waters, Georges Bank, it's very small numbers.
Okay, like, there's not a lot of them.
You'd see one over the course of several days, maybe. They're just not common. But they breed, South Polar Skua, as you might imagine, at the South Pole. It breeds in Antarctica. And they're known, they're not very popular because they beat up and eat penguin chicks.
Oh, no.
And so they tend to nest near penguin colonies, like Adélie penguin colonies. And you can see these pictures of them online, just like jumping on top of penguin chicks. And they're sort of brutish birds. And I think that they're here, and there have been more sightings than ever. And I think it's because of all the shearwaters, which we'll talk about next.
That's next on my list, yeah.
And shearwaters are one of the birds that they like to harass and steal food from. So the Jaegers are chasing terns, and terns are sort of small and delicate. But a skua is big enough and strong enough that they'll harass birds like shearwaters and even gannets.
Big, strong
seabirds
that
they'll go after and intimidate them into dropping their fish. So they're big, tough birds, and really, really unusual to see one from land. And people have been getting pictures of them almost every few days out at Race Point, mainly, where most of the good seabird action is. So that's been definitely exciting for birders.
All right, let's talk about these shearwaters. The numbers of them out there right now. Tens of thousands, really?
A biblical plague of seawaters. It's really been amazing. And so... The Cape is known already as a place where you can see lots of shearwaters from land at times. Really all summer long, any of the east-facing beaches, there's a chance you look out with binoculars, you'll see 2, 3, 4 species of shearwater kind of zipping up and down. And I don't know if people take that for granted or what, but that's not normal most places in the world. These are pelagic seabirds typically that'll be, not within sight of land very often. They're out in the middle of the ocean in a lot of cases. But because of the geography of the Cape,
we stick out.
The bare and bended arms sticking out into the ocean, and we tend to get birds like that, and whales and other things that people normally have to be in boats to see, we can see from land. But the numbers this year are just absolutely epic. And if you go to Race Point and sometimes other beaches, like it was like this at Nauset Beach in Orleans the other day, you'll just see 3,000 in 10 minutes,
wow,
just streaming by or more. Some of the counts, some of the one-day counts have been 24,000 great shearwaters in one day at Race Point. And it's not just the numbers streaming by. Because of the bait fish concentrating basically right up at the shoreline, we're washing all these little peanut bunker, these juvenile menhaden, mm-hmm, that are one of the key bait fish for things like stripers. they're being pushed onto shore by bigger fish like mackerel and other things that are chasing them. And so these shearwaters are getting into feeding frenzies where thousands of birds in just ankle-deep water.
Wow.
I mean, some of them are ending up on the beach, and you have to understand the biology of these birds to understand why that's so unusual. They're just not, you don't see them doing that. They're not that, and, you know, these birders are just standing in the water surrounded by shearwaters that you would normally have to see, you know, out in a boat
but
somewhere.
You go where the food is, right? If the
you
buffet
go where the
is,
food
in, is in shallow water, we'll go there.
Yeah. And if you walk that beach, Race Point Beach, Hatches Harbor, there are just windrows of peanut bunker, these little shiny little bait fish. They look like little herring, they're related to herring, all in the rack line. And it's strange. It's mainly shearwaters and mainly great shearwaters. 99% of them are great shearwaters. Some of them are okay shearwaters. Some of them are really good. No, great shearwaters is the species name. But there are three other species that we get. Sooty shearwater, and there have been a few of those. Corys. Normally there would be more Cory shearwaters. They've increased a lot in recent years, but for some reason this year they're not out there. I'm not sure if it's water temperature. Corys is typically a warm water species. They come over here from the Mediterranean, and they're usually more common kind of further offshore, where the closer
water
to the Gulf Stream,
mm-hmm,
where the waters are warmer, and further south. But for some reason this year, I think some of the water temperatures are not as warm this year, and so we don't have as many Cory shearwaters. And then there's also Manx shearwaters out there, a few of those. But overwhelmingly, it's been these great shearwaters. And these are really fascinating. They nest on islands off of the southern end of South America. So they've made some effort, along with these South Polar skuas, they're coming up from basically down by Antarctica. And so they nest on these Tristan da Cunha Island. It's a long way from any land out there in the South Atlantic. And they come up here for our summer, their winter. And there's just the richness of our waters is really, they show us that,
mm-hmm,
right? I mean,
right.
You know, we know about the whales. The whales are out there. But just this biomass of birds, this astounding, eye-popping biomass of birds that's out there,
right. Well,
and
look,
the fish.
If you can get over to Monomoy, I would think now would probably be a good time, wouldn't it? I mean, the numbers of species of birds you can see in one afternoon walking around Monomoy is mind-blowing.
Yeah, I mean, Monomoy is great. I mean, South Monomoy is great for shorebirds, ducks.
Mm-hmm.
South Monomoy is hard to get to.
Right.
It's kind of it's a wilderness area. Seabirds on the ocean side, but yeah, there's a good diversity of birds down there.
And Race Point, just let's go back to that for a second. It seems like, I mean, Race Point, it doesn't really matter what time of year you go to Race Point, you're pretty much probably going to see something unusual. Doesn't it seem that way?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not any worse in the winter. It's just different.
Different birds,
it
yeah.
There's just kind of a shift change. You get, you know, winter birds in the winter and summer birds in the summer, and you can get really rare things any time of the year. It just changes what you might find.
And, of course, a good spot to see the right whales when they're around.
Whales. You can see whales from shore there any day of the year.
Yeah. Not right whales.
No, sometimes it's the wrong whales.
So
but
wrong whales.
Humpbacks, fin whales, you can see there all winter long if you catch it right. But it's just a remarkable place.
866-999-4626 is our number if you have a bird comment question, or as we said, any other creature you'd like to talk about. Also, are you seeing hummingbirds? Are there still hummingbirds coming to your feeders? 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point. It's Bird News with Mark Faraday, science coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. Our number, 866-999-4626 for your bird questions, comments, or stories. Or as we said, if you want to talk about some other creatures that live here in our region, we'll be happy to talk about that. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we want to know if anybody's still seeing hummingbirds, because the hummingbirds pretty much have migrated at this point, right? Most of them are out of here, or are they still here?
Well, this is when they start disappearing. By mid-September, they're on their way. But increasingly, you know, I had one, at least one, into the beginning of October last year.
Oh, wow.
I went out and bought my pineapple sage yesterday at my local nursery. It's kind of an obscure plant. I went to one nursery, and they were like, what's that?
I know what it is. And they like that?
Oh, yeah. So the deal with pineapple sage, I think I've talked about it here before. It you know, it's an annual, and they start, some nurseries start stocking at this time of year. And, you know, it blooms through November and sometimes beyond. It's pretty hardy, and it's a great hummingbird plant. It's got these tubular kind of yellowy, orangey flowers.
Mm-hmm.
They love it, and it's blooming at a time when not much else is blooming. So the idea is, you know, I'll put it in some pots and put it out on the deck, and that's blooming when a rare hummingbird might show up.
Oh, yeah, because this is the time we would see that, right?
Well,
we're getting into the time.
This could be. I mean, really, any time after August. But once the ruby-throated hummingbirds leave, and then there's sort of this gap, and then I'll get word of a hummingbird, and then I know it'll be something rare. Mm-hmm. If it's October, November, and a hummingbird shows up, it's almost certainly going to be like a rufous hummingbird from out west. And oftentimes, the people who end up with those have, you know, it's often somebody who left their feeders out. Mm-hmm. I always tell people to keep your feeders out through November. Or somebody who has a lot of pineapple sage, because it really will attract these rare waifs, these lost waif hummingbirds that really, they just screwed up. They didn't migrate right.
They didn't leave in time.
They're here, and they're not going anywhere, probably, so you might as well put out some food for them.
All right. Joan is giving us a call from East Harwich. Hi, Joan.
Good morning.
Hey, Joan.
I have a hummer.
Oh, you do?
And
yep.
I have a catbird. And yesterday afternoon, I had an oriole, a female oriole, and my hummer is not only going to the fountain feeder for the nectar, but it's also going to the jelly dish.
Mm.
Now, what could it possibly?
Wait, what?
Actually sits down and is licking the jelly dish.
Really?
Really, I have pictures of it doing that.
And it's not flying. It's standing on the jelly dish,
yeah.
Joan?
I can picture it.
On the rim, and it moves itself around the perimeter of the jelly dish, and it keeps bending over and licking at it. Could there be little insects that it's going after?
It's probably more the sugar. There, insects. I mean, it's certainly possible. You could probably figure that out by watching them. It may just be the sugar. I mean, obviously they're sugar addicts, or he could have a distant cousin who's an oriole.
What flavor jelly are you using, Joe?
Grape jelly.
Yeah, standard. That's the standard oriole and catbird jelly there. I've not heard of that. So thanks for that.
Instead of raisin feeder right next to the jelly dish, and it totally ignores the raisins.
Send us a picture, like Joan. Send us a picture. We'd love to see that.
Okay.
Thanks, Joan.
Thank you.
And thanks for the report. Bye. Stephanie is calling from Harwich. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Good morning.
I have a pretty, it's probably a common question or a common bird. I have hawks. I live in, I have a yard which is between some 200-year-old spruce trees between my house and the distant bog. And there's a family of, I believe it's a family of hawks that have sort of turned my yard into the killing field. And I hear a tremendous amount of screeching, which I don't recollect hearing before, from the hawks. And I just wanted to know about that. Is this just a war cry, or is this a yearling trying to get fed, or what?
I think you're going to have to move, Stephanie.
No.
No, I'm just kidding. These are probably, so it's during the day, I'm assuming. You're hearing this during the day?
Yeah, I'll hear it in the morning, hear it at dusk, I'll see them. You know, they sort of swoop down, they'll come over, hang out, and I've got a bunch of 200-year-old trees.
Yeah, so you've got...
So they will sort of hang there and see what's going on, but they swoop around through the, probably a half mile.
Okay, yeah, you've got young hawks. So young hawks are kind of like, toddlers.
Teenagers.
They're loud. they're demanding.
Okay, that's what I assumed.
They demand to be fed long after they should be independent. And this is true of a lot of birds. You still see there are juvenile terns that are flying around screeching at their parents, even though they're supposed to be independent now. And hawks, baby birds of all kinds, are still doing that. And hawks are no different. And so they're probably Cooper's hawks. The sounds that juvenile hawks make are kind of similar between species. And so I probably couldn't tell you what kind. The likely ones are Cooper's hawks, could be a red tail. There are a few red-shouldered hawks here and there, including in Harwich. But have you gotten a good look at them?
I get a good look underneath, so I can't really tell. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've sort of swooped down in front of me. It didn't. As I recollect, it didn't wasn't obvious.
Yeah,
to me.
It was hawk-like, right?
They move like hawks.
I
yeah.
Sort of nosed around a bit, and I figured it was probably a Cooper's hawk.
Yeah,
I was going to say it's Cooper's hawks. The way that they swoop is so graceful.
I have like entrails left in the middle.
Oh dear!
Yikes!
Three-legged rabbits.
Oh boy!
Oh, that sounds more like red tails or Cooper's hawks would be eating the birds at your feeder.
Yeah.
This sounds, maybe red tails or. You might even have young great horned owls around, and they can be vocal during the day. I'm not saying that's necessarily what you're seeing, but it seemed to be a good breeding year for great horned owls, at least the places I hang out. Both at Wellfleet Bay Sanctuary, where I work, and at my house in Harwich, I hear young great horned owls, in the case of the sanctuary, literally every day. Hmm. They're just right in the campground woods right there. You hear them from the parking lot, the driveway, and they make this kind of, you probably know the hooting, the familiar hooting of a great horned owl. Hoo, 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 hoo.
Right.
But for the first year of their life, the juveniles can't do that. They just make kind of a it's just raspy screech, and it confuses people, and people sometimes think
what
it's a barn
that?
Owl,
yeah. No.
But it's a young great horned owl, and they'll make that sound for a year, and I've been hearing those both in my neighborhood in Harwich and in Wellfleet, so that's another possibility. They do it mostly at night, but they will do it during the day.
Would
sometimes
they be swooping
as well.
Around during the day though?
No. At dawn and dusk, yeah.
Yeah, but she says she's seeing them during the day. So
I'm sure
it's probably
hawks. So
yeah.
I just wanted to put that other possibility out there. There might be other people
somebody
out there
might have that.
Hearing
all right,
it
Stephanie,
at night.
Thanks for the call. Let's talk to Jane, who's calling from South Wellfleet. Thanks for holding, Jane. Hi, Jane.
Hello, Jane.
Jane, are you there?
Jane.
I think Jane may have left us. All right, Jane, give us a call back. We also have an email from Mike in Chatham who says, I still have hummingbirds coming to my feeders. I also have orioles and my grape jelly feeder, but last sighting was 2 days ago. At least one male and several either females or juveniles. Catbirds still here too.
Yeah, so things are sort of trickling away. Neighborhood by neighborhood, a lot of people are probably like, well, I don't have hummingbirds. I don't have orioles. I went a day without seeing any hummingbirds and thought they might have slipped away a little earlier than I would have expected. But then yesterday there was one there all day visiting my Rose of Sharon, visiting the butterfly bush, sort of avoiding the feeders. I was kind of surprised. Hitting the zinnias.
Yeah, wouldn't you think, though, that the blooming flowers would be better than the feeders, or maybe not?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. All summer long, they're hitting the feeders pretty hard, but usually they do both in my
experience.
Bit of everything. But yeah.
866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So we are starting to see the fall migration of lots of things. Fall migration starts way earlier than fall, but osprey starting to leave now?
Yes. Right. Ospreys are going to be thinning out. I'm sure a lot have left already, especially females. Sometimes if you have young that are still haven't quite fledged, they're not fishing on their own. I'll get calls this time of year from people who are concerned about a young osprey that's calling, and there are no adults paying any attention to it. I mean, sometimes the adults will just leave. But sometimes a male osprey will stay behind and try to get that last fledgling kind of hunting on his own. So you know, you'll still see them around, but they're also on the move right now. Yeah. And so
I saw one. I think it was probably a younger osprey by the bike path on Surf Drive yesterday, and thought, oh, there's still one left up there, but I couldn't really look because I was driving, so I had to take a quick peek.
Yeah,
check it again today.
Yeah, especially here, the Falmouth area is like osprey central.
Yeah.
Oh, there's so many. So they'll be around, you know, here and there, and probably potentially into October. But mm-hmm. they're definitely heading south now, and so the adults will be beelining it. And we know this from satellite tracking studies, like Rob Beauregard's satellite tracking studies of a lot of Vineyard and Westport River and some Cape ospreys. The adults are kind of no nonsense, and they just like, once they migrate, they go straight down the coast, then they go to Cuba, and then they go to Venezuela or Brazil. But the young ones are going to be in a wandering phase for a while, mm-hmm. and they'll be turning up in strange places. And if you get a late, like an osprey in the middle of October, that's almost certainly going to be a young one that's wandering around.
What about these osprey that go to Cuba? I mean, I guess the ones that are in Florida, they're kind of year-round. Do they stay there in Florida year-round, or do they migrate someplace else?
Right. So there are populations that don't migrate. So an osprey here, if it migrates down through Florida, will be hopping over non-migratory ospreys that are resident in Florida. And why would you migrate if you live
right.
in Florida?
I'm just thinking, like, you know, the devastation from the hurricane, you know, which I'm sure displaced many osprey. As these other osprey, a lot of times they return to nest, like maybe if they were in Cuba, or wherever they're going to. What if their nests are gone? Do they just rebuild? Find another spot?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would think osprey nests would be something, and bald eagle nests. A lot of bald eagles nest in Florida as well. I'm sure those were devastated, but you know, they can rebuild the nest itself very quickly. But you know, in a lot of cases, the trees they nested in, the pole they nested on, you know, whatever structure they were nesting on, will be gone. So they're going to have to they'll have to find new places to nest. They're just one of the birds that'll be negatively impacted by this. And you know, any birds that were migrating out over the ocean that get caught in these hurricanes, I mean, they're at risk. A lot of there's been kind of a what happens to birds and hurricanes article that's been getting passed around on social media. It was in Forbes magazine of all places, but it's really interesting. You get a lot of birds that are migrating out over the ocean, heading south. Things like they gave the example of chimney swifts, little tiny chimney swifts, a cigar with wings, as Roger Torrey Peterson called them. But they have to get to the Amazon basin from potentially Canada. So they've got a long way to go. And if they end up out over the ocean and get caught in a hurricane, they're sort of at the mercy of those winds. And there was a case where a bunch of chimney swifts got caught up in a hurricane and ended up in Europe. And so the European birders were all a Twitter, like, you know, they don't normally see, they've probably never seen a chimney swift before. But, you know, who knows how many of them died. Those were just the ones that made it. And so you think of these little warblers and things that are migrating out over the Atlantic, getting caught up in these. And a lot of them don't make it. I mean, that's part of their life history. That's part of their world, is that not all of them make it. And they've evolved with those hurricanes.
It's a very dangerous world for a bird.
Yeah. There was an interesting case with some whimbrels. And we'll talk about those at some point, hopefully. But somebody was tracking some whimbrels with satellite tags, and they ended up, I think it was her, was it Irene? And they ended up flying straight into it. And so they were kind of flying into these really strong hurricane winds at first and going very slow because they can get the airspeed from the satellite transmitter. And they're flying very, very, very slow. And then they ended up in the eye. And then they got spit out the other side. And were suddenly these whimbrels were flying, you know, 100 miles an hour.
Wow.
Because they had a hurricane force tailwind. And so it all sort of evened out. And amazingly, they survived those winds. They're pretty big, strong birds, relatively speaking. But yeah, it's something they have to face when their migration period coincides with hurricane season. That's just how it is.
Charlene is giving us a call from Chatham. Hi, Charlene.
Hi. I just wanted to mention, I heard you speaking of hummingbirds, and I have two hummingbirds, and I've never had hummingbirds. that have started hanging out and feeding off of jewel weed. Which,
oh, that's the favorite.
A little tiny yellow flower on some
very good
small weed-like plant. Mm. And they love this jewel weed.
Oh, absolutely.
Completely hang there, yeah.
I think that may be the single best wild hummingbird plant right now. And if you might have kind of like wet edges to your yard, you'd live like adjacent to some kind of a wetland.
Yeah, on the fringe of a marsh, yeah.
Yeah, so jewelweed, the genus is Impatiens, though it's nothing like the terrible robo plants, Impatiens, that you buy as annuals. This is a beautiful, wild, mostly wetland border plant. It's also called Touch Me Not.
Yeah.
And so the seed pods, there's a fun thing to do with kids. The seed pods are these spring-loaded things. And when they're ripe, you touch
exactly.
them. And these little
press them and they, and
yes,
they burst.
Right
they,
the
yeah.
seeds go rocketing out and shooting across whatever. Those little yellow tubular flowers are just ambrosia to hummingbirds. it's just one of their absolute, along with cardinal.
Oh, just like crazy. Yeah, you don't have to do anything to them.
Right. Cardinal flower is the other wild flower that is one of their absolute favorites. And if you have both of them grow in wetlands. And so if you have those, if you see those, watch them for a while, you'll probably see hummingbirds.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing, Charlene. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 or thepointatcapeandislands.org. Tom writes, every day for the past couple of weeks, I've seen a single osprey sitting on the nest at Gray's Beach in Yarmouthport. Sometimes it's chirping incessantly. Other times it's quiet. I've never seen it fly. Until recently, there were two adults and three young at this nest. It seems like the other osprey left weeks ago. A couple of crows sat on the roost nearby, something that never would have occurred when the adult osprey were around. Is this a stranded osprey, a fledgling that couldn't fend for itself? I ask this because there was a photo in the Cape Cod Times earlier this year showing a young osprey being transplanted to this nest after a nest in Dennis was destroyed. I suspect that is this bird. Is he stuck here? What do you think?
Well, he's on his own. I'm sure he can fly. It's just, you know, he's not quite ready to stop being fed probably. And so he's kind of standing around like, hey, where's my lunch? Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, I mean, these young ospreys have to fish for themselves. They don't migrate with the adults. I mean, this is by now every young osprey should be independent. If they're not, if they don't have an adult that stayed behind to kind of nurse them along a little bit, then they are on their own. And, you know, I'll get calls about these birds, and it's not a case where you really would intervene. It's just kind of how things are. And he may be fine. You know, he may just kind of figure it out. And as long as there's nothing physically wrong with him, he can fly, then he may figure out, hey, I need to go fishing.
Yeah. And he will, hopefully. 866-999-4626 or our email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point. It's Bird News with Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to chime in. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So it seems like a lot of people are still seeing hummingbirds, so that's good.
Yeah, I figured they would, but this is when they start disappearing. Yeah. So
don't be surprised if all of a sudden...
Yeah, really, you probably have less than a week left with these guys, so okay. Enjoy them.
Enjoy them, yeah. All right, so fall migration, and what are you guys seeing at the banding station?
So we've got our banding station going again for the fall migration season at Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary there. And James Junda is our master bander running the station again. We're lucky to have him back. This year, he's also running a station at South Monomoy again for the first time in a few years. And I'm really interested to see what they get down there because it's just such a wilderness down there and just an outpost in the water. Surrounded by water, and so migrants end up there and the handful of pine trees down there and really have nowhere to go. But the station at Wellfleet so far has been pretty good. It's been a good warbler migration, relatively speaking, starting in late August. A lot of species that certain species that we don't see typically, like Cape May warbler. Cape May warbler is in spring. It's a gorgeous, like bright yellow, fine black streaking and his chestnut-colored face, a beautiful bird that we you typically don't see very much of. But it must have been a good spruce budworm outbreak year in the boreal forest. This is a kind of a tree pest in the boreal forest that when there's an outbreak, the warblers tend to do very well. There's a lot of little budworms for them to feed their young, and so you get a lot of young Cape May warblers and bay-breasted warblers and things like that. And that seems to have been the case because people are tripping over Cape May warblers, which is typically rare. And we had three in one day at the banding station.
Wow.
I mean, we've had some other nice birds, Acadian flycatcher at the banding station, which is very rare. Other warblers like yellow-breasted chat, which is not really a warbler. But in any case, there's been a good diversity of warblers. Excuse me. And people can come. We do public banding demonstrations twice a week, Wednesday mornings and Saturday mornings at 8. People can sign up for those. And they're really cool. I mean, it's an opportunity to talk about the data they collect, see a bird up close, first of all, and just talk about how they do things like age them, you know, tell the sex, look at the molt, you know, talk about their migration strategies and how their physiology, how their molt strategy plays into that. Just a lot of cool bird biology that we get to talk about during these banding demonstrations. So I'd encourage people to sign up for those.
Yeah.
Sue Finnegan is banding at Wing Island there. She had a Connecticut warbler. There's been a couple of Connecticut warbler reports too. That's another one that I've never actually seen one on the Cape. They've ended up in the nets a few times, but a real skulker. So it's just been nice to see a good variety of warblers, which we don't always get in the fall.
But won't we get some more warblers in October?
Yeah, so October tends to be the better migration month on the Cape because we get stronger cold fronts, more kind of stronger winds with westerly components to them. Sparrows are migrating then, and so we'll get kind of a more obvious migration in October where you can go out and find warblers and sparrows and things. In September, it's more subtle.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of slipping through, but it's been very nice. come check out the banding station.
All right, John is giving us a call from Hyannis Whale Watch. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Hey, John.
All right, what are you seeing out there, John?
I just wanted to chime in and support the Race Point Shearwater show has been incredible. I'm jealous. A lot of times I'd rather be standing on the beach with all the shearwater than on the boat.
Yeah.
It's just been incredible to see. And one of the highlights from that was a few weeks ago we had our naturalist, Joanne, said, John, weird bird, and as she often does. And I popped out to look, and here's a white shearwater flying along with all the others.
Oh, right.
And
saw
a couple of quick photos of it, and I got a good study close by. It looked like a sooty, but, you know, it is. Sooty shearwater out among them, and then I saw a photo posted online later that seemed to confirm that. And that I'm amongst all those birds. Stood out. It was pretty amazing.
Thanks for mentioning that. That's been kind of a cool thing is the Moby Dick of shearwaters, the white sooty shearwater.
Indeed.
And sooties are typically all dark brown with kind of a whitish wing lining. But the impression that you get of them is that they're just all dark chocolatey brown. And they're always out there. But there's this one that is completely white. It looks like an almost complete albino. And a lot of people have gotten photos of it. It turns up every few days, and the seabirders will see it at Race Point. It's interesting. Like John is saying, the whale watch boats aren't necessarily the best place to see the shearwater show because it's right along the beach.
Mm.
It's either right along Long Point or Long Point Wood End in Provincetown or Herring Cove or more frequently Race Point, and right along the shoreline.
So you can't get that close.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just been really. Go ahead.
Even more so. Not as spectacular. In Barnstable Harbor, where we leave from, over the past couple of weeks, we've had in the channel that feeds it and right into the harbor itself a number of Cory shearwaters. My high count was 12.
Hmm.
Just seeing them, I saw one fly over one of the exposed sandbars, and the bird kind of looked down and was like, what am I doing over land? It was bizarre, but there's so many of these little bunker, as you were saying, that mean, it's feeding everything. So it's been a really great late season for the shearwater.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, corys used to be pretty rare, but as waters have gotten warmer in recent years, they're more expected, and they do end up in harbors sometimes. I see them probably almost more frequently than great shearwaters, like in Wellfleet Harbor, and I'm not sure why that is, but they seem to be comfortable getting blown into harbors.
Hmm. What are you seeing whale-wise? Are you still seeing some whales?
There are still whales around. It's been an odd season, you know, and as Mark was saying, maybe it has something to do with water temperatures or a million other factors that I don't understand. But for birds and for whales, it's been a year of a whole lot of movement. We're seeing whales coming, checking out things at the bank, and then going back down to the Great South Channel. And then a couple days later, the same whales show up, and a couple days later, they leave. It's probably something to do with the unsettled weather moving the bait around a lot, too. But there are whales out there. And it's been, you know, again, beautiful weather these past few days. So we're making we're doing some exploration with the other boats and finding some neat stuff out there.
Yeah. Been hearing there's been some breaching, really cool breaching. I know that I've heard from people going out there and the time I went out there. Has there been much surface feeding by the humpbacks?
There has not this year. I don't think that this is a big year for the sand eels or sand lamps.
Right.
They typically push to the surface and with their bubble netting. And a lot more focus on again, the numbers of peanut bunker that are available for them, faster moving, and they don't sit as nicely for them to build their bubble traps around.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, 1 in 15 trips, as we say, we get a humpback whale breaching, and that's always a spectacle.
Yeah. John, did you hear about, I don't know if it was a week or two ago, some recently, the Steamship Authority between the Woods Hole and the Vineyard, somebody got a picture of a whale breaching, but they weren't sure if it was a young humpback or a minke. I thought, well, there's kind of a difference in size there, but did you hear about that?
We did hear about it. I don't know that there was ever any confirmation on what it was.
Yeah, I don't think there was any confirmation.
The whale breaching at a distance and you know, just see the white water, and until you can get an outline, it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
And for us on the whale watch boat, when you see a whale breaching in the distance, that's kind of like the sirens on the rocks singing, come to me, and by the time you get there, they're going to stop.
Yeah, but that's pretty unusual in Vineyard Harbor there, Vineyard Sound for...
It is.
Yeah.
There is, but it probably has something to do with the concentrations and quantities of food that are available for these animals this year. It's been a good year, but an odd year.
Yeah.
A lot of movement by all the whales from the very beginning of the season right up as we head towards the end, which for us is just after Columbus Day.
I was just going to ask you that. So you go till Columbus Day.
Yeah, about a week after,
okay.
Weather permitting.
All right, good. Well, we'll keep us posted. We always love to hear what you're seeing out there, John. Appreciate it.
Thanks, you guys. Have a great one.
You too.
Thanks, John.
All right, Becky is giving us a call from Harwich. Hi, Becky.
Oh, hi. And it's not seasonal. It was a pairing that I watched in May, early May, and we've had a lot of rain, so getting out for a walk wasn't a regular daily event, and I was walking in Harwich at the Bank Street Bogs that are cared for by the Harwich Conservation Trust, and I was walking very slowly to make sure I didn't miss anything, and all of a sudden I saw this very quick movement, and I stopped completely, and I realized that it was a pair of mallard ducks, and it was the male on top of the female. And his wings were very rapidly beating so he could keep his balance, I guess. And I started moving very, very slowly so that I hardly even felt like I was moving until I came right across from where they were. And they didn't even notice me. They were very busy. And
busy doing what?
Apparently mating.
You
and
stop
there
that.
Were... As you know, in the bogs, there's the irrigation canals all around the bogs, and so this was an area where they have, a straight of way where they land easily. I had seen them there over the years, you know, many times, just being there but never mating. And what was most interesting was that there were three other males, maybe about 5 feet away in the water. And they never
even indicated that they saw me, not the three males or the pair mating.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to share that because, you know, I had never
had that
experience of being able to just stand there and watch.
Yeah, Becky, thanks. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for the call.
It was the not safe for work segment of the of Bird News. But, boy, if you want something that'll curl your hair, Google up the mating habits of ducks. It's
crazy.
It's wild.
All right. Yeah. Let's talk about the fieldwork for the Wimbrel and Red Knot tracking projects before we run out of time.
Yeah. So I've been helping Brad Wynn from Manomet, formerly the Manomet Bird Observatory, who's been working on a Wimbrel tracking project for years, including back when he was down in Georgia. And the idea is to put a satellite transmitter on a juvenile Wimbrel from here in New England. Because we really don't know anything about this population of Wimbrel, whatever population of Wimbrels that come through here. And this is an Arctic nesting sandpiper, big, tall, beautiful sandpiper with a long curved bill. Most people probably haven't seen them unless you've been around Wellfleet Harbor. There's a good number of them in Wellfleet because of all the fiddler crabs we have. Mm. They're here to just chow down on fiddler crabs before they migrate to the Caribbean or more likely Brazil for the winter. And so a couple of years ago, we got a transmitter on a bird in Chatham, and that bird wintered in the Caribbean, and then Brad was pretty sure that it was on its way back to the Mackenzie River Delta in northern Canada, but it didn't quite make it. It either dropped the transmitter or died. And so just yesterday, they caught another one on Lieutenant Island, got a transmitter on that bird. I don't have its name yet, but it's a bird that eventually will be able to track, if all goes well, on this website called seaturtle.org, where you can track all kinds of critters, including birds that have satellite tags on them. So we're excited. We're hopeful that this bird makes it and, learn something about that nobody has ever learned before, right, about the population of Wimbrels we have here in the Northeast.
And what about the red knots? Doing the same thing with the red knots?
Oh, the red knot, that's coming up soon. That's Fish and Wildlife through Monomoy. And Larry Niles from New Jersey comes up. He does the banding down there in the spring in Delaware Bay of a lot of red knots, where they're down there gorging on horseshoe crabs. And then he comes up here in the fall, works with Fish and Wildlife, and they're looking to put different transmitters on red knots. They've been doing it for years. I usually help out with that project. Just again, looking at specifically the young ones and trying to figure out where they're going. A lot of concern over red knots, particularly with climate change. Birds that nest in the high Arctic are really, really under the gun with climate change. The tundra habitat they nest in is shrinking. The tree line is moving north. The weather up there is screwing up the timing of their breeding season.
And also the timing, if those horseshoe crab eggs aren't laid at the right time with them coming through, the food isn't there for them. Yes,
there's a lot of potential for that, too. So a lot of concern over red knots.
Yeah, well, just thank Janet, who sent us in a photograph. She called it a hummingbird moth. Sphinx moth, right?
Yeah, hummingbird sphinx moth, yeah.
Yeah,
Himeris thisbe, if you want the scientific
They're cool
name.
Little moths.
If you have a butterfly bush, you should look out for these. They're
probably
really
have
cool.
them. Yeah,
they do
look kind of like little mini hummingbirds. And you want to mention Cape Cod Bird Club meetings are starting up, so if people
are
interested in that.
We had first meeting of the year last night. They go September through May, second Monday of the month. We have those at the Cape Cod Museum of Natural History at 7 o'clock. You don't have to be a member. They're free and open to the public. We have speakers. Last night was Joan Walsh from Mass Audubon talking about State of the Birds Climate Change Edition, Mass Audubon project. It was a great talk. Later on, Kate Iaquinto will be talking about all things Monomoy bird research at Monomoy in November. I'm still working on a speaker for October, but people should just come by. And there's lots of walks and things, free walks. So check the website, Cape Cod
Bird Club.
Is
that always at the Museum of Natural
Always at the Museum, yeah.
All right, great. Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary, is here the second Tuesday of every month. Of course, does his bird report weekly. Thanks, Mark. We'll see you next month.
See you next time.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.